officials from the party present here to most welcome. And the today we're going to be receiving a presentation from ESCOM. So you most welcome. Members of the public who are present, you all welcome. We will go straight after receiving apologies to listen to the presentation by ESCOM. We're trying to wait to see if other honorable members will join us. I'm told others are still on their way. The reason we asked ESCOM to come today before we go to our short recess was because 2 weeks ago we had the energy regulator here to give us the reasons for their decision on the ESCOM application. In that meeting, we did indicate that at some point we will ask that we see ESCOM so they can also talk to the committee about their application and subsequently the reasons from NERSA. There are issues in the presentation that NERSA gave to us, and one of the key issues we're concerned about was with regard to the future funding of ESCOM and the sustainability of ESCOM in the light of the kind of tariff increase that was approved by NERSA. So we couldn't ask NERSA this question, so we had to wait for ESCOM to understand what their plan is. I don't know if there's anybody from the Department of Public Enterprises. Deputy Director General, I'm very unhappy. She's always here when, at least even if the minister or the deputy minister is not here, but she's always here. Let me give over to ESCOM. Apologies first, and then after that, we'll have an introduction of the members from ESCOM who are here. I was told that there have been changes in the recent past. So I will ask Mr. Kosa to give us the apologies and then hand over to ESCOM.
Thank you, Chair. The following apologies. Mr. Matlala was unable to attend as he is on sick leave. And then Mr. Gada, who indicated that she's running late, but she will be joining us, Chair. And then we also received the following apologies, Chair. Apology from the Minister of Energy, who's attending court proceedings today in Pretoria. And then also an apology from the Minister of Public Enterprises, who is attending the launch of the Youth Employment Services Initiative. And then also an apology from the Deputy Minister of Energy, who's currently abroad. And then an apology from the Director General of the Department of Energy, who's attending meetings in Pretoria. Those are the apologies, Chair. That's what they indicate, this Chair.
Dioe, what is the DG doing in Pretoria?
Thank you, Chair. The DG is with the Minister attending the court, yes.
Now I understand. Okay. Yeah, there's a hearing in court today, so we will suppose all of us will be waiting for the outcome. So you said, what did you say about the Deputy Minister? Let's give over to ESCOM. We haven't seen the minister since the appointment. I understand that there've been other things happening. In the last few meetings, we did accept that he couldn't come. It's coming too many meetings now. I think I'm looking forward to see him in the committee. I hope in the next meeting he'll be here. Unfortunately, because of the court case today, there's not much we can do. The people from DOE, will you please tell the minister that after the recess, we have a long meeting here, and I hope he'll be here to stay with us for the whole day. So, over to you. Please start with the intro. Did you do the... Oh, okay. You said Honorable Kata is on her way, right? Okay. ESCOM, at long last, I think we must give over to you so you can start with your introductions and the presentation. Welcome, Honorable... Yeah, I know you have been very busy in the some other inquiries. It had nothing to do with ESCOM, the inquiry. She was busy with some inquiry.
Okay.
So please go ahead, and you're most welcome.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, ladies and gentlemen, good morning. Probably I need to start by introducing myself. My name is Nelisiwe Magubane, and I'm one of the board members of ESCOM, and I also would like to tender the apology for Mr. Mabuza, our chairperson. On my left-hand side is our interim group chief executive, Mr. Phakamani Radebe, and on my right is acting CFO, Mr. Caleb Kasim. And then, of course, I've got Senior Manager Regulation, Mrs. Hasha Tosilimaje. Members of the committee, on behalf of the Board of ESCOM, would like to thank the committee for affording us the opportunity to present on the tariff increases awarded to ESCOM. We regard this as an important step to building public confidence in ESCOM and its importance to the South African economy. As a board, we are confident that we will successfully execute on the mandate that has been given to us to return ESCOM to financial stability and sustainability. The appointment of the new board of directors on 20th January 2018, led by the chairman, Mr. Jabu Mabuza, and supported by the executive appointment of the interim group chief executive, Mr. Phakamani Hadebe has been seen as a step in the right direction for Eskom operational and financial stability. To ensure further leadership stability and as indicated in the statement by the President, the board has been tasked with appointing a permanent group chief executive and group chief financial officer, which we anticipate being in a position to finalize in the next month. Although there has been keen emphasis on ensuring Eskom's sustainability by addressing its liquidity and going concern issues, of equal priority has been addressing governance matters relating to maladministration and malfeasance. The board has thus spent the first 2 months looking into inculcating a culture of effective and transparent governance, including but not limited to ensuring that those who were engaged in fraudulent activities are brought to account. The prioritization of this process of restoration has since led to the departure of five senior management, including executives, on the face of serious allegations of misconduct. A further four executives remain on suspension, two of which will be facing independent disciplinary hearings in the month of April, with the remaining two scheduled for early May. As the board, we believe that the action taken against those who were key in some of the critical governance lapses within our first 90 days in office demonstrates the seriousness with which we take our mandate of rooting out irregular practices. We view this as only the first step in combating corruption, but by no means the end of the story, as we will continue to pursue wrongdoing and take corrective actions within the South African legal framework. We recognize that the irregularities do not necessarily only affect the executive level, and as such, we are in the process of undertaking mandatory lifestyle audits of all employees, two levels below the group chief executive. We are firm in our belief that we will clean up this institution as we turn it around. When we actually arrived in Eskom, we were told that there was a number of employees that were doing business with Eskom. So to address the issue of conflicting interests, we have further instructed Eskom employees that they will need to decide whether they pursue business with Eskom or whether they remain in Eskom's employ. Therefore, no Eskom officials are allowed to do business with Eskom and also remain as employees of the group. We have encouraged people to use the whistleblowing facility and to openly talk about what they know. The response has been very positive in that there are now 239 matters being investigated. While corporate governance issues remain critical and important, the board is also working on a new business strategy that will ensure that Eskom is sustainable. We hope this process will be completed by the end of September 2018, and we will come and share the outcome of that strategy with this committee. Notwithstanding what has already been mentioned, it is important that there is clarity on important issues such as long outstanding municipal debt and tariff increases from the regulator. We are therefore honored to be given an avenue for this by this honorable committee to discuss the challenges we have encountered due to the tariff increases that Eskom received recently. These have and will put a strain on the financial performance of Eskom, and we hope that this committee will assist us to find an amicable solution. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Phakamani Hadebe will take us through the presentation.
Thank you so much, Sis Nelly, Chairman of the Parliamentary Committee, members, and ladies and gentlemen, we are honored to be here today, and we hope this will be an engagement that will be continuous, because we think we can only learn from such an engagement. I will start at a strategic level. Then Caleb, our CFO, will go deeper into the discussion. We've been at Eskom, ladies and gentlemen, for 2 months, as the member of the board has already indicated. And in these 2 months, there have been some successes. There is a positive story that we are beginning to see on the horizon. Notwithstanding this, we are the first ones to acknowledge that the journey is just beginning. We have a road to travel. There are major challenges ahead of us. I think the main one, and the member has alluded to, is to create, to craft, to formulate a sustainable strategy for ESCOM as we endeavor into the forward challenges. An engagement of this sort, therefore, Chair, is very, very important because it then highlights some of the areas that we have to look into as we build the strategy. The first thing that the board had to do when it was appointed was that it had to announce the financials. Now, these are interim financials that should have been announced after September last year, so they are half-year interim. But because of a number of challenges that ESCOM was facing, that could not take place. Those challenges were, for example, the 2017 audit report was qualified. And after that qualified audit report, investors just moved out from ESCOM. In other words, they couldn't fund and ESCOM could not source any funding whatsoever. And that created a big challenge in that it means then from July after the announcement last year of the financial and the audit, the qualified audit, from July up until January when the new board was announced, the access to funding of ESCOM was limited. In fact, ESCOM could only fund through the development finance institutions on the deals that have been signed before. And accordingly, the operations of the institutions were affected. The second issue that caused this is that during that term...
I'm sorry.
Yes.
I don't want to come back to questions later. Just repeat that part.
Chair, I'm highlighting that normally ESCOM has a weekly borrowing. So what had happened is last year in July, ESCOM was presenting their financials, the 2017 financials. That is as at the end of a year, March 2017. However, there was a qualified audit on those annual reports. And due to this qualified audit report, investors were then no longer interested or willing to buy the ESCOM bond, which means, therefore, that ESCOM could not operate as a normal going concern institution because the availability of funding was curtailed. So it had to reduce its funding. But at least there was some form of funding that was available that was coming mainly from multilateral institutions, the development finance institutions, because that's an agreement that ESCOM have had with them. So this starts from July up until January this year when the new board is appointed. So when the new board is appointed, the board was under a lot of pressure to then finalize the interim, the financial results, half-year results that should have been announced at the end of September. But these were not announced because probably ESCOM would have had another qualified audit report. Why is it so? It is so because, one, the liquidity issue was a concern, and the auditors will find it very difficult to declare ESCOM a going concern. That's the first thing. The second thing is there were a lot of activities that took place during that time, and they left an impression within the financial market, but also those that the various stakeholders that had an interest in ESCOM, that ESCOM was not dealing good corporate governance, that the control systems were weak, and those that had been found wanting were left without paying the due price they were supposed to pay. So these were two issues when this board came in. So the first thing that the board had to do was then to try and convince investors that they needed to fund or to lend money to Eskom. And Eskom was expected on the 20th of February when the board was appointed. Eskom was expected within the next 3 weeks to have raised an amount of 20 billion rands, otherwise would have defaulted. Then the board started engaging with the market participants in trying to seek this funding of 20 billion. And it became clear to all of us that even if before we can start talking about this funding, the fund managers or the investors wanted to see commitment from Eskom with regard to governance, and that is, how are we dealing with governance issues or those that are corrupt? And the member of the board has indicated what we did. That is why, accordingly, within a space of 2 weeks or so, the board had already exited about six senior officials of Eskom that were implicated in corrupt activities. Once we were able to do so, then we then were able to generate that kind of funding. In fact, we did not only raise 20 billion, we raised an amount of about 30 billion in a period of about 2-3 weeks or so. But as of today, I'm happy to announce that Eskom has been able to raise, now in gross terms, an amount of about 43 billion from the market. But in net terms, because some of the borrowing could be 3 weeks, could be 2 months or so, in net terms, we have raised the borrowing of 33 billion. Now, this indicates two important things. It indicates that, one, the market or the fund managers, investors, are beginning to welcome Eskom back into the financial markets. And that is important. But secondly, it also highlights that Eskom now can begin to diversify its funding because we are attracting various investors. Notwithstanding this, Chair, it is worth highlighting that for 2018, Eskom has a borrowing requirement of 72 billion. That is what we have to raise in 2018-19. The issue that we will be discussing here has therefore direct ramifications as to the ability of Eskom to remain a going concern, and we'll talk about that later. Of crucial importance is what I've already highlighted, and that is, we will need to come up with a sustainable strategy that will ensure that Eskom operates another 100 years as we are enjoying the 95 years of the existence of Eskom here in South Africa. And we have already had a discussion with the Line Ministry, Minister Gordon, where the board felt there are quite a number of challenges in the strategy and the corporate plan that we endorsed, that we received from the previous board, and that we request the minister to approve only a one-year corporate plan because there are certain issues of concern that the board felt that we better understand the business of Eskom better, but importantly, we might take different decisions in ensuring the sustainability of Eskom, but importantly, to ensure that Eskom does not trade recklessly. The Minister of Public Enterprises agreed on that, and we are therefore expecting that by the end of September, we will have a comprehensive, integrated strategy that will lay the ground as to how we maneuver ESCOM going forward. Again, I would like to emphasize that the decisions that will be made on that strategy will also, to a larger degree, be informed or be influenced by the tariff relationship that we have with NERSA. We will present our own side of the story as to what is our analysis and understanding of the fees or the tariffs that we got from NERSA. Then we will be very willing to engage further if there are any questions, which I'm sure we will get, and to clarify some of the position or the strategy that we're endorsing as ESCOM. Caleb, I think you can take one. Yeah.
Good morning, Chairperson of the committee and honorable members. If you can go back one slide. I think as Pakamani has highlighted, and this is just a snapshot of the interim financials that ESCOM released at the end of January, literally within two weeks after the new board was appointed, I think on the 20th of January. We had to do that because if ESCOM did not release its financials by the end of January, our bonds and the JSE could have been suspended and we would have had various ramifications in terms of our loans, etc. And effectively, this slide just summarizes the year that we're currently in and that we'll finish by the end of this week, which is 2017-18. It's the fifth year of the multi-year price determination, MYPD3, of which we've got a 2.2% tariff. And effectively what that implications has shown that all the financial ratios are trending negatively for this financial year based on, one, a combination of the tariff, and number two, another contributing factor has been the decline in terms of sales volumes effectively. I think a 1.9% that we see in this financial year. And what has happened, as our chief exec has said, during this financial year, especially the first half, right up until December before the new board came in, whatever was ESCOM's cash balances from the beginning of March 2017 were literally used and drawn down up until December to meet our obligations, etc. And then our cash reserves were basically depleted, and that is why when it came to January and the release of the financials, it was important that with the support of the board, Department of Public Enterprises and National Treasury, we had to engage and obtain this $20 billion loan facility, which was then finally agreed in February. During that course of the period, we did get some interim relief at the beginning of February to ensure we can meet our cash flow commitments and debt service commitments. So that's the financial ratios that you see as at September, and basically you will see I have a slide that just gives you a snapshot of our results as at the end of December, the year to date, but which is these financials, which basically shows that the cumulative period up until the end of December, this is our management reports, they're obviously unaudited, etc., has basically shown literally a break-even position. However, I will say that, you know, normally we find, because ESCOM is a cyclical business, we make our profits in the first half of the year up until September, Honorable Chairperson, and in the second half we make losses. So in this last quarter you will see further strain being placed on ESCOM's financials as we get towards year-end, because that's the period when we tend to do more maintenance. Number two, the sales volumes are lower in summer compared to the winter period when it's generally colder. And the last contributing factor the tariffs that are charged, depending on the seasonality, Eskom's tariffs are much lower compared to winter, which all then puts further reduction in terms of your revenue inflows, etc., which will then impact on your position when you get to year-end March. I think we've touched on the $20 billion loan and the importance of that, etc. But I think, you know, that is a short-term facility that is provided to Eskom. According to that agreement, at the end of August this year, Chairperson, 2018, Eskom must pay back 20 billion rand of this short-term facility. And that is why my chief executive has mentioned we need to raise 72 billion in the next 12 months. The first 20 billion will be used to repay the bridging loan, and then basically the remaining 50 billion will be used for our capital expenditure that we do incur on an annual basis. Effectively, Eskom's financials does not allow us at this point in time to contribute to our CapEx spend. We basically borrow 100% on our CapEx requirements, and I'll talk about that a bit later in the next few slides. I think, Chairperson, the important thing to also highlight, and maybe why the concerns and from one, the auditors around Eskom's going concern, this financial year it's a 2.2% price increase. We're going into April, which is the next year, which is the 5.23. That's the reason why we are. That averages about 3.75, which is below inflation, which then has knock-on implications in terms of our cash flows. If we move on to the next slide, I think what I want to just highlight, what we've seen is that especially the rating agencies, all three rating agencies, have downgraded Eskom in the recent past, and effectively some of the reasons, and these are extracts from the rating notices that were issued in terms of Fitch on the 31st of January, there was no firm, tangible government support that was highlighted from government's perspective to help address the recent NERSA tariff announcement. I think that definitely, you know, in all our discussions with the rating agencies, they have welcomed the appointment of the new board members and the interim chief exec. However, they do look at the core of the financials and what the cash flows are saying. And based on the information that we have and the outlook going forward, it does reflect that it's going to be a challenge for Eskom in the next 12 months to meet its requirements, and that was the reason why firstly the 20 billion had to be initiated and implemented. And then at the end of the day, it all comes down to the cash flows and how do you meet them, and then your commitments to make sure that Eskom is not only financially sustainable, it is also operationally sustainable, that we need to complete the commitments we have in terms of our bill program and also maintain the existing assets in the generation, distribution and transmission arena. Chairperson, if I move on to the next slide, I think this is just some history which I just want to highlight in terms of context. And effectively, this is just some extracts from the information especially the last two. When MYPD3 was applied for, at 16% times 5, and NERSA awarded us 8 times 5%. I think what we just want to highlight there, the year that we're in, you know, institutions like the Electricity Intensive User Group as well as PUSA have done their own detailed analysis, and their views was they were expecting that the price of electricity from EIUG would be in the region of 98 to 112 cents per kilowatt by the time you got to 2017-18. PUSA have mentioned a number of about 102 cents. And currently in this financial year, the price of electricity is sitting at 89 6.3 cents. And if I go into the next financial year, if I add the 5.23% that was awarded by the regulator in December, that takes the average price to about 93.8 cents per kilowatt. So the point there we're highlighting is that even these large intensive users who understand the industry and the requirements in much detail, their analysis was that they believe that the price should have been much higher than where it currently is. Chairperson, if I move on, now I'm getting into the details of why Eskom was requested to attend the committee. It's just our understanding and interpretation of NERSA's decision and what are our analysis at this point in time. Where are we? This is just a summary of the regulatory decision. Eskom applied for 219 billion in total. NERSA disallowed 29 billion, reducing it to 190 billion for the financial year 2018-19. My understanding is NERSA would have taken the committee through the details. I'm not going to repeat that. Maybe the only point I want to highlight to you, Chairperson, is that in 2017-18, the total allowed revenue the year we're in by NERSA was 205 billion. The amount that's allowed for next year is 190 billion, which is a reduction of about 15 billion from their previous decision. We do acknowledge that relates to the reduction on primary energy costs, which needs to be adjusted when you have lower volumes. But if I just look at that table that's presented by NERSA, there's a the amount of primary energy that's disallowed is 11 billion. But I think the point I'm highlighting is that Eskom is now has been allowed to collect less revenue than 17-18 in terms of the regulatory decisions. If we move on, Chairperson, I think on this one we must understand that Eskom applies in terms of the legislative requirements and regulatory framework in which Eskom operates. Firstly, the Electricity Regulation Act, that the regulator does regulate prices and tariffs. It must enable an efficient licensee to recover full efficient costs as well as including a reasonable margin. There must be avoid undue discrimination between customer categories. And importantly, from the MYPD methodology, the objectives must be ensure that Eskom is sustainable as a business and limit the risk of excess or inadequate returns while giving incentives to ensure there is new investments. Tariffs can be smoother to take into account socioeconomic objectives of government, etc. And it must be set at a level where there's appropriate commercial risk being shared between Eskom and the customers. And I think on that point, Chairperson, maybe if you look at some of the commentary, especially around the rating agencies, maybe the balance in the last decision and maybe on the back of a 2.2, I think rating agencies and lenders are uncomfortable with where those levels are. Maybe it's too one-sided in favor of the consumer and Eskom's ability to meet its commitments going forward. If we go on, Chairperson, and we did, if you go back, this was the original slide. It was quite detailed, and Chairperson, we basically tried to repackage this from a more graphical perspective, but it relates to the same content on the previous slide. And all we're highlighting here, Honorable Chairperson, is that to the members that you must understand that Eskom asks for its own costs and its own returns in terms of the methodology. And there is an element of pass-through with in terms of the IPPs that's included in that determination. And what we've seen that in the 17-18 year, the amount of 2.3% that was granted, literally about half of that went for Eskom's own costs, and the other half contributes to the growth in the IPPs in terms of their volumes and their costs. If we go in terms of the 18-19 financial year, the year that we're going to be embarking upon from April, of the 5.23%, our interpretation of the decision, Chairperson, is that first portion of that will be 2.23% that will be linked to independent power producers. 3% for independent power producers, and then Eskom will get 2.23% for its own costs. And I think that's an important factor that we're highlighting, that if you exclude the IPPs, it's effectively saying that Eskom's cost base and what's required in terms of meeting its debt commitments must only grow by 2.23% in the next financial year. So I think that's an important part. It's not that the entire 5.23% goes directly for Eskom's own costs, its own primary energy, its own staff, maintenance, and other operating costs. If I move on, Chairperson, again, similarly, and I think this is an important point. What we've picked up from the detailed reasons for decision, and maybe the first point I want to highlight here is the MYPD methodology states that you need to use the most recent information when you're making your decision. And effectively, our interpretation of the methodology is that Eskom has actuals that the CE spoke about in terms of FY16-17, which was completed in March 17. When we made this application, we were still projecting where we will land up for 17-18, and then you forecast the year that you're requesting a revenue application for, which is 18-19. Our understanding of that is that the most recent information and the activities that give rise to that and the forecast must be taken into account by the regulator when making the decision. And when we interpreted the detailed reasons that were published by the regulator, you will see that their reference points for some of their decisions is not consistent. They use various points in terms of that timelines. For example, employee costs, references made to 2007-08, what were the sales levels there, what are the sales levels now, and on that basis a decision was made in terms of what is the appropriate employee costs that should be allowed for Eskom. Similarly, when it came to coal costs, NERSA made reference to what occurred in FY13-14, which is effectively almost, 4 or 5 years ago. And we supply the regulator with lots of information in terms of the coal contracts, how they escalate, etc., going forward, and what is the recent values. But in the decision and the reasoning for what was allowed for coal costs, our interpretation is the regulator made reference to 13-14, and allowed for that to escalate by inflation without understanding what are the developments and what do the detailed contract and escalation clauses stipulate. And then you will see in the last 2 years, the sales volumes, they make use of the latest information and other primary energy and IPPs. And then for maintenance and other costs, then the actual results were used. Now, the point we want to highlight here is why is NERSA not applying our understanding of that the interpretation should make use of the latest available information and what influences that, rather than going back as far back as 2017, 2008. And I'll explain some of this in more detail as we unpack the decision. So what we just like to say, yeah, as we said, you know, we believe that, for example, the regulator in its analysis has then said around employee costs that ISCOM should reduce its staff complement by 6,000 employees, which is about equates to about a 10% cut from April 2018. I think the one point we want to highlight here is the basis that NERSA applied in terms of employee costs, and when they refer to the sales volume, what's generated per employee and what's generated in 18-19, it's different to their reasoning that they did in MYPD3. When they made the MYPD3 decision around and the justification for employee costs, they use a ratio of number of employees per megawatt of capacity that is installed. And in that decision for 17-18, NERSA were comfortable, and their reason states that ISCOM's staff complement approached a number of 38,000 in 2017-18. So we are struggling to understand why do you now change your measurement criteria from one decision to a new decision. And this is where inconsistency around applying a methodology doesn't only create challenges for ISCOM and its interpretation, but more importantly, when lenders and rating agencies review the decisions, they are uncertain as to the predictability of a regulatory decision. And that uncertainty to any investor creates concerns and challenges, which I think are reflected in some of their decisions around the downgrades. We've also, Chairperson, for example, if I go like almost to the second last point there, NERSA has mentioned that ISCOM will build 3,000 kilometers of lines for 2018-19, but in actual fact, we're only going to do about 596 kilometers. And the last point there, which I'll touch on in my conclusion, the regulator does provide a free cash flow analysis, and according to their calculations, they mention in their determination that there's 32 billion rand worth of free cash flows available to ISCOM. Our main concern around that is that when we looked at them taking the revenues and the costs, their assumption around capital expenditure is that ISCOM's capital expenditure will be 29 billion rand. But they do make mention of, now it becomes technical, and apologize for that, Chairperson, what is regulatory asset-based related CAPEX and what is non-regulatory asset-based CAPEX. But I think irrespective of the definition, when you analyze it from a cash flow perspective, if it's an outflow that ISCOM must incur during the year, and on average we've been incurring about 55 billion worth on capital expenditure per annum, NERSA's cash flow analysis assumes only 29 billion of CAPEX outflows. Now the question is, how is the other remaining 20 odd billion of capital expenditure going to be funded, which we don't understand in terms of the determination, and how is that going to be done based on the history we've seen. Fine, move on. So, Chairperson, again, I'm just looking at the repackaged slide to try to make it easier for the committee members. I think we must not forget that ISCOM does have an element of fixed cost and variable cost, and we acknowledge that where the item is variable in nature, it must fluctuate as the volumes move up or down. But there are elements in our cost base that are fixed. And our understanding is that when we interpret the decision by the regulator, to a large extent, it's almost interpreted as many of the items are variable and can be changed effectively in a very short space of time, which we don't believe that that is possible, especially in a short space of time. As an example, Chairperson, if I take the reasoning behind the employee costs, and then it's linked to the number of gigawatts that are produced and so on, and based on that ratio, you reduce the employee cost benefit for Eskom. Now, we know we've been on this expansion program, especially Medupi and Kusile, which takes a number of years. So then the interpretation for how we read that in terms of aligning it to the NERSA decision, as you're constructing Medupi, that means you should not be allowed any costs of employees that are linked to Medupi until the station produces and generates in 7 years or 5 years' time, which we believe. Now, how do you cater for that fixed component, especially in a construction program that has long durations of lead times? And those are the areas that we struggle to understand the reasoning behind it. Following MYPD3, Chairperson, yes, Eskom does acknowledge that it needs to have an efficient cost base. It needs to look at its costs, its operating costs, and we have made a number of strides to reduce that cost base. We're always striving to reduce it even further, and the new board has challenged us on that, and we'll look to do that. Over the period of MYPD3, the 5 years, we were targeted for a 60 billion rand reduction. At the end of year four, we had achieved 47 billion, and we think we will get very close or achieve the 60 billion in the five-year window. However, the disallowances for the next financial year are quite steep from a regulatory perspective, and especially implementing that in a short period of time is quite challenging. I think the one point we want to do, and this was raised by many stakeholders during this last application, is yes, we know that technologies are changing. The introduction of PV solar will come into play. But the studies that we've seen and studies that are quoted reflect that maybe about 5% of volumes will be impacted by PV penetration by 2021. It's not going to happen immediately overnight, which means then a large component of other consumption will be the traditional means. Chairperson, if I now go into the details and the technicalities around some of the key variables as Eskom's interpretation of NERSA's decision, I think the first point I've touched on is that we believe that NERSA should, according to the methodology, use the latest information around coal costs, understand and integrate what the existing contracts stipulate, and whatever escalations or clauses that are included in those contracts that exist. And then that should be used as a basis of determining the amount that is allowed in terms of coal costs, and not going back to a year and then effectively allowing for an inflationary increase on a 13-14 financial year. Effectively, NERSA's requesting Eskom to drop its coal cost by 20% for the next financial year. With regard to the regulatory asset base, NERSA has stated that Eskom has excess capacity, and therefore in greener and honored power stations are removed from our asset base. Chairperson, when we look at our production plan that we submitted in the application, it actually required both Ingrina and Onot to run for the financial year of 2018-19. And our understanding is that those power stations cannot just be merely removed because you believe that Eskom has excess capacity. Yes, we do have excess operational capacity at certain points during the year, but depending on the hour during the year, those stations may be required to run, and that's what our production plan revealed. I think the other point on that, we also understand that we need to see what the IRP says around the life of Onot and Endrina, and we're not sure whether the removal by the regulator is consistent with the IRP. We're still awaiting the new IRP. Chairperson, and on the bill program in terms of owner's development costs, what the regulator has said there, that owner's development costs are included under operating expenditure. Our analysis of the reasons for decisions, we could not find out where that amount is disclosed and how much is included in terms of owner's development costs per their reasons for decision. If you go on. I touched on this, and all we're trying to say there, if you look at the last graphic, there are many measures that you could use in terms of employee contribution at Eskom. The number of customers have increased from 4.1 million to almost 6 million. We find that the number of power lines, kilometers have increased, etc. Your capacity in terms of MVA. And the only component that has decreased from a 2007 to a 2016-17 reference point has been the sales. So the point we just were highlighting here, Chairperson, is many of the other factors have increased, are given reasons for why the staff complement has grown during that window. Carry on. Chairperson, with regard to maintenance costs, the large amount that was disallowed by the regulator was around generation, an element linked to when you remove Endrina and Honor, then you remove the maintenance. You know, we have electrified a lot of customers in the past. Those electrification customers require maintenance, and we believe that we should be allowed to recover that. And at the end of the day, Chairperson, we don't have only aging fleet of power stations, but our networks are also aging that require maintenance that is based on an activity-based methodology rather than just taking a previous year's actuals and growing it by inflation, etc. Other operating costs we found here as well. Effectively, our interpretation of the decision was that the actuals were taken and then just escalated for inflation. However, the one item I will like to highlight is that as Eskom is completing our new bill program, the amount of insurance that Eskom must undertake as those new assets are commissioned increases, and our interpretation is that the amount that was awarded for our insurance recovery industry termination has not fully taken into account the bringing online of our new bill stations, which increases our asset base significantly. Can carry on. Chairperson, I think the way forward, as mentioned, you know, I think I can personally say that, you know, once the new board has come on into Eskom, definitely from a domestic market, there's much more positive sentiment. But I think, you know, it's one important factor to access funding. But when you sit across the table with lenders, they ask you to your face, you know, do you have the ability to repay my interest and my capital when it becomes due? And based on your cash flow projections and your assumptions around, firstly, Eskom's costs, and number two, around what that revenue will be via a combination of the volumes and the tariffs, then I think that's where questions come into play around the ability of Eskom to meet its debt service commitments. I think in terms of where we are as ISKCOM, we've reviewed what we've got in terms of the RFD. We've highlighted some of the areas of concern from our perspective. But at the end of the day, we got to ensure that we meet our commitments, not only our creditor commitments, but that of our loans and our debt service commitments, complete our build program that's currently on the cards to ensure that ISKCOM is both operationally and financially sustainable into the future. Thank you.
Executive, do you want to say anything at this stage?
Thanks, Chair. I think, Chair, what we would like to highlight is that there's a difference of opinion with the regulator on some of the numbers. However, having raised that issue, we are comfortable that at some stage we'll find a solution into that. However, when you have listened to Ms. Makubane when she presented on the corporate governance and the strategy that we want to entail, it is important that we somehow come to some form of equilibrium with the regulator so that we are able to plant a clear future as we move forward.
Before you go away, just tell me, when you're saying you are confident you'll be able to find each other, are you referring to the 2018-2019 application?
We still hope that 2018 is not a closed issue, but even if it goes that route, that at least 2019 will find a solution. We hope for 2018, but if we don't, then surely 2019 we should conclude on it.
Yeah, I'm actually referring to 2018. I hear you. That's the important thing for me. Okay, Ms. McBurn.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Definitely we have the view that between ESCOM and the regulator, we do not have to be friends, but at least let's be able to engage amongst ourselves. But more than anything else, Chair, the atmosphere when this application was made also was not really conducive for a very good engagement. So I'm of the view that going forward, that is going to change quite significantly.
Let me welcome the CFO of NERSA. I don't know who else is here. The chief executive of NERSA. I don't know who else is here from NERSA. We invited them to sit in. They will not be answering questions today. So when we close the our meeting 2 weeks ago when NERSA came to make their presentation, I didn't make the point you're making now, that context is important. So I'd ask that, why are the things that happen now didn't happen 3-4 years ago? Why are they only happening now? So context is always important. So without expressing any view, but I was quite certain that the environment in which all this had happened had impacted on how conclusions had been arrived at. Just looking at face value of the information we're receiving. Okay, the next thing, we will now get questions from members. The just a small issue. So when you, Ms. McGovern, when you say appointments in the coming month, do you mean April?
Yes, Chair, because most of the work has been done, so we expect to make an announcement during the month of April.
Okay, I'll just hand over to the members now. There are many things that have happened in the past. You see, from where we sit as the Portfolio Committee of NH, there are many committees here at Parliament with different mandates and focus. So our issue from where we sit as the Portfolio Committee of NH, we know there are things that happened in the past that are important that must be addressed. The overriding concern for us is always energy security for the future. So the issue, the reason we have NERSA here is because we do believe that the ESCOM, NERSA, or any other government entity, we've got to find one another in how we work. We should be coming different conclusions based on different information. When information is there, it can be accessed. We can disagree on certain things, but it mustn't be because there hasn't been sufficient conversation to ensure that we speak, we working from the same information base. Another thing that I think we've got to address quite seriously going forward is Department of Public Enterprises and the Department of Energy. So Department of Public Enterprises is not here. So who's here? Donald. Oh, Donald, you here? Okay. All right. I just want to say that, so going forward, that's an issue we've got to address. And I hope that we can be able to address it when the executives are here. Because the question would arise, when this miscommunication happened, where were the line function departments, where the those ones who are supposed to oversee the work of the regulator, and of that of ESCOM. So where were they? We shouldn't have landed in this situation where decisions arrived at on the basis of misunderstanding when the two departments are there. So that issue, it has arisen in the past in the committee. We want to return to it about how robust oversight by those departments is over the entities that report to them. But and I'm not going to pick on the officials that are here. We like to do this when the appropriate persons are here. We can raise this with them. Thanks very much, though, ESCOM. I'm not going to put my questions at this stage, and so I will give over to the honorable members to ask their questions. You have your hand up, Davis. No, I wanted to greet Honorable Mahambesa, so before you raise your hand. Okay, can you? take heads. Okay, there's only one hand. Honorable Davis. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you very much to the ESCOM board for being here and for the presentation. We understand that it's a new board and it's hopefully a new era at ESCOM. So we want to give you the benefit of the doubt, and we all want you to succeed in the difficult job that you have ahead of you. Chairperson, before I ask some questions, I just want to make a note that we only received the presentation at 18 past 9 last night, which is quite late for us to get the presentation. Some of us go to bed quite early these days as we're getting older, and some of us have meetings from early in the morning, so it makes it quite difficult to prepare. So I just want to register that and just to say that we really need to be a bit more disciplined about when we get the presentations. I'd also just like to register our unhappiness with the absence of the ministers, because you know, we understand that they have busy schedules, and we know that they can't be at every portfolio committee meeting. But as we saw last week and in previous weeks, it makes it quite hard on the officials when we ask questions which border on political questions that they can't answer. And if they can't answer them, it means that we are effectively constrained from asking questions that we are required to ask. So it just puts us all in a very, very difficult situation. But, Chair, you have acknowledged that right at the beginning, so I'm not going to belabor the point. I'm just going to start off on the financial performance of ESCOM. In summary, your earnings declined by 2 billion rand. Your net profit is down by 4 billion rand. Your cash is down from 32 billion to 22 billion, and your liquid assets are down from 30 billion to 9 billion. So it's a very, very bleak picture that you present in your presentation. And you say that you will have a plan ready by September. It feels to me that that's too far away. You know, we are only in March, and we'd like to hear from you today what is the embryo of your plan. You know, which direction are you heading in? Because we need to get beyond a situation where ESCOM is relying on government bailouts and ESCOM is relying on ramping up tariffs for consumers. So if you could just give us a sense of what that plan is, because surely you are already working on something. We can't simply just wait until September. My next question relates to municipal debt. Now, ESCOM is owed 13 billion rand from municipalities, and I think if you were paid back all of this money tomorrow, it would significantly change ESCOM's position. So my question is, what steps are you taking to recover this money? And what is going wrong, in your experience, now that you've at the helm of ESCOM, what is going wrong with ESCOM's credit control that it can allow its debtors' book to balloon so spectacularly? And what steps are you taking to change that? Then in your presentation, you mentioned a 20 billion rand loan. I just want to clarify, does this include the 5 billion rand loan that you took from the Government Employees Pension Fund, or is it separate? You say that it will be paid back by August. Are you confident that it will be paid back by August? And what are the implications if it's not paid back? Then we've read news reports about a 30% tariff hike for the next financial year. So you've asked for 20% for this financial year, and there's reports that you want 30% for the next financial year. And if reports are to be believed, this is really because of the 66 billion rand that state capture costs ESCOM. They call it the money that was incurred during the Gupta years. That's how the news reports put it. So can you just confirm whether you will be asking for a 30% tariff hike in the future? And if so, how could you justify such a hike, especially given that NERSA has already rejected your application for 20%? Then my next question relates to a page of the Record for Decision that NERSA published, and it relates to ESCOM's death spiral. Now, a death spiral is defined as when a utility needs to recover costs from an ever-diminishing customer base. And NERSA argues that increasing tariffs will only speed up this death spiral, and it therefore recommends that ESCOM must focus on cost reduction instead of increasing tariffs. So my question to you is, what is ESCOM doing to reduce its costs? And related to that is the issue of salaries and bonuses that are paid to ESCOM employees, but particularly very well-paid senior employees at ESCOM. Now, we know that last year ESCOM paid 4.2 billion rand in bonuses to its staff, and that 5.5 million rand of this was for just three executives, and that was Mr. Brian Molefe, Mr. Maswolo Koko, and Mr. Anoj Singh. 5.5 million rand in bonuses to three executives of an entity which is hardly a going concern. So my question to you is, will the ESCOM board and the executive management team forego their annual bonuses until ESCOM is back on its feet again? And we'd like a very clear and direct answer to that question, please. My next question, if it's like, Chair, if you don't mind if I've just got two more questions, Chair. My next question is on elasticity, which features quite prominently in the NERSA record for decision. And I think that the notion of elasticity is really at the heart of the dispute between ESCOM and NERSA. I mean, that's my reading of the record for decision. Now, NERSA says that electricity is price elastic because for three reasons, essentially. The first is that consumers can choose to consume less electricity if prices are too high. Secondly, consumers can generate their own electricity. Some consumers, if they have the means, can generate their own electricity and essentially go off the grid. And thirdly, big firms can move their plants to other locations in other parts of the world where electricity is cheaper. So they argue that if you increase the price of electricity too much, people will simply stop consuming the electricity, and that will lead to the death spiral that I mentioned earlier. Now, in their record for decision, NERSA says that you, in other words, ESCOM, reject this argument. And in fact, you say that that electricity is price inelastic, that people will continue to buy electricity in the same amounts regardless of the increase in price. So I'd like to know from you, on what basis do you argue that electricity is price inelastic, because it's not spelled out in the record for decision? And if electricity is price inelastic, as you argue, does that give you a license to just charge consumers whatever you like because you know that they're going to pay for it? And I think that there's a moral argument to this. So even if it is price inelastic, there is a moral argument to not keep ramping up prices and charging people beyond what they can afford. Then one of my perennial questions, which the Chair doesn't like me asking, but which I have to ask anyway, relates to the nuclear deal. And I'm not trying to sneak this in through the back door. It's a legitimate question. Now, Minister Khadebe has been unwilling to say that nuclear is off the table, although there's been lots of reports that it's unaffordable, and the President has said that it's unaffordable. Nevertheless, it is still not off the table. So the door is open, as we understand, for a nuclear deal, and we understand that the IRP is going back to Cabinet. Now, in your understanding as ESCOM, would such a nuclear deal add to ESCOM's financial burden? And if so, how is it possible to embark on a nuclear build program given ESCOM's current financial constraints? And related to that, I'd also like to ask you about an internal ESCOM document that has made its way into the public domain. It was essentially ESCOM's submission on the IRP process, which said that nuclear is unaffordable and unnecessary. Do you stand by that report? In other words, is it the view of ESCOM that building a new nuclear power station is unaffordable and unnecessary? And that's it for now. Thank you, Chair.
Not because it's a holy cow. I was just trying to keep focus. And let me assure you, when we come back, the very first meeting, we're dealing with nuclear. and several other issues. But ESCOM will respond to your question. Honorable Mabane.
Thank you, Chair. I only have one question. I would like to know what this tariff increment that you have requested, if NERSA had given you the 19 point whatever that you had asked for, how is this going to affect municipalities that are owing you, people on the ground, you know, those people from, how is this going to affect you? And how was it going to affect the fact that ESCOM is unable to collect money from municipalities? Won't this debt be increasing more and more if you get the 19? And going forward, I'm trying to think, Jorge, how is all of this, if you are to get that 19, the effects on our people at the ground, the effects on the municipalities that are unable to pay even now, the effects on ESCOM as a whole of in collecting, in getting that money to their bank accounts. Thank you, Chair.
Come back for another round. Those questions should be sufficient for now. Oh, honorable, do you want to come now? I must ask you first. Do you want to ask? Do you want to belong to this first round, or would you wait?
Yeah, please. I had my hand up the very first.
I didn't see you.
I know, you always ignore me.
Oh, yeah, okay. Go ahead,
I'm joking. Ngiyabonga Nomzane. Let me start on page 8 of the presentation. You know, I think to say that a net profit and 6 billion, that's absolutely not ESCOM. The ESCOM group's profit is 6.36 billion, not ESCOM. ESCOM is technically bankrupt, so to speak. Electricity sales projected to be 175.6 billion towards a budget of 196 billion. That's nearly 4% lower, and it's dropping every day. Your demand is actually dropping day. ESCOM also had a largest exposure to South African banks, more than 218 billion rand. South African Airways, which is also banks, are basically only get 20 billion. So much for that. Also, the concern was about the pension fund loan. I think that's paid back now, with interest, I hope. Also, my colleague next door, next to me, mentioned credit control, and I'm really concerned. Municipalities' debt is going up every day. And I just, actually before that, I'm very happy to have this new board, and although only acting still, the CFO sing. I hope somebody who's not going to sing a certain family's tune, so we hope that everything will improve from now on. But still, municipality debt escalated. It's over 12.5, something like that, billion rand. Now, where is it going to end? Where is credit control? Where is it? How are you going to stop this? go to page 15. This also I don't understand all that much. Here you $345 million are awarded from $691 million for open cycle gas turbines. Now, what in the world for do you need? You already budgeted for maintenance. This is not when we had the power cut. You don't need diesel for open cycle. What are you going to do with 345 million rand for open cycle gas turbines? Buy diesel? I don't understand that. 290 million rand for demand market participation. What on earth for? Eskom hasn't even got opposition. IPPs, you've from 34, NERSA awarded, I think, 26.6 billion rand. You know, on a budget of 445 million rand that we've seen on a previous presentation, Eskom has only used 18%. Only 82% down for independent power producers. So you wanted 34 billion rand for IPPs. Now the trade unions are saying that you can't. You know, we... Trade unions are making the decisions for us, the taxpayers now. We're not using. We have 200 million and over of foreign investments already, but we, then the minister say IPPs is going ahead. You know that a while ago that Spain wanted to withdraw the World Bank completely, the loans, and Eskom and the whole economy would have collapsed for you not signing the IPPs, and then it was only signed in the renewable energy. I really, I think it's a disgrace. The multi-year price determination. How can they get away with it? Maybe it's not you more, maybe it's more NERSA, the regulator. But municipalities are using this multi-year price determination tariff increases to supplement their revenue resource. And this all at the cost of the taxpayers. Depreciation on that same page on 15. I really don't know how we can have, you know, in my little 2 rand shop, I always also write in my budget something off on depreciation when I hide it away. Very easy to hide something under depreciation. You mentioned, the media have mentioned already closing down 2 power stations, but nothing really happened. Maintenance is it. So to do to 29 million rand on depreciation, what the hell, what was that for? How can you do 29 million rand on depreciation? What are you writing that off on? On some places you also... On page 21, NERSA assumes Eskom will build 3,604,000 kilometers. Eskom plans to build 596. You know, NERSA, if I'm not mistaken, sits on the board of the grid planning and things. But you haven't even planned. There's no access to the grid for IPPs, for renewable energy. What do you budget for? What do you want to do with that money then? There was no plan for IPPs to put on the grid. And even on the integrated resource plan, there was transmission mentioned, but nothing was really printed. And grid access can't be an afterthought. You maybe know that as well as I would do, or better than what I do. Also something, and I don't want to hammer on nuclear. I really think nuclear is off the table. The whole country, you haven't seen really what happened. My colleague has mentioned nuclear. We had court cases, and it was unnecessary proven for nuclear. But what do you use all the money on the budget? You use hundreds of millions of rand for nuclear already, for planning, for... says there was a few sites already identified. God knows what happened to all that money. All that hundreds of millions of rand that you've already spent on nuclear. For what for? Nuclear will never be. Never be. Mirza, on your page 26. You say that Mirza applies a reduction in the headcount, a serious thing. And you cannot understand the basis. The basis is based so very simple. So many personnel you need for the capacity that you generate, the kilowatt hour, you need so many people. You need so many people. So as nurses say, and everyone say that Eskom is completely top heavy. You've got thousands too many people, according to what your capacity is. You now say, the Honorable Mumzana Mayola, the chairperson, told me that you, no, I'm joking, he never said it, that you and Mirza get together and you say, I want 6% increase. I'm saying this tongue in the cheek, I want 6% increase. You say, Let's say we want 20%, Nursa say we give you 5.5%, and we keep the stupid taxpayers happy and say, hey, Nursa is working for us. Now, I'm really saying this tongue in the cheek, but I really, you know, since 2009, you keep, Nursa has lifted up, your cost increase went up 440%, and zero capacity more. Not a single kilowatt hour more. Where's all that money going? Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks, Omar. Let me have responses, and we'll take another round of questions.
Thanks, Jeff. I think the discussion would be shared amongst us, yes. We'll keep referring to the document. I think the context of the questions that Mr. Davis and Mr. Easter Heathen are asking are similar on the strategy. And we can begin to give a picture, which I think that's what you need, mainly, of where do we see Eskom going to, roughly, strategically, at a very high level, because we're still looking to that. And this will answer some of the questions. If you keep looking at Eskom in the past 18 years or so, you will note that expenditure, both CAPEX and OPEX, increased by 17.5%. That's the cost of a business. If you are looking at the revenue side, during the same period of time, up until 2018, revenue increased roughly about 13-14%. And the question that you are asking are relevant. Because we are saying, how could you increase your cost above your revenue? And we can bring down the cost. You know, the largest percentage cost has been the capex. That is large. And within the OPEX, the largest contribution has been primary energy, coal, mainly coal. Coal, it's about 85 billion a year. And there are employees that are about 30 billion a year. Now, what we have done as a board, and this will be finalized, was to come to some agreement that we should not only look at the business on the tariff side, but we also have to look on the revenue side. How do we maximize the revenue side of this? And how do we contain the cost, which is the issue you're raising? And accordingly, we've put a plan. And we said we are looking at reducing the capex by about 10 billion vis-a-vis last year, annually over the next 3 years. That's quite a mouthful. Initially, let me give numbers, Chair. Initially, we were looking at the capex of about 75 billion. That has since been reduced to annually at about 45 billion over the next 3 years. This reduction in revenue, is it sufficient? Chair, we can say that if we do that, then in 2021 and 2022, ESCOM will be generating more revenue or more income than the cost of servicing debt and the debt capital. That is what we presented to ESCOM. We came and we said, that is the story, but we need to work further. The agreement that came out of that meeting was, good, you are in the right direction, because we see that we are tightening the cost side. I must highlight, Chair, that even the OPEX side, the first budget on the OPEX, we're looking at about 115 billion. This was reduced to 105 billion. So if we do this, by 2021 we'll be fine. But that is not what we are looking for. The discussion that took place with the board is that this is an institution that is facing severe challenges, that we need to do more than that. In other words, reduce your cost by even a bigger percentage. Let me rephrase. What will it take ESCOM to achieve that level where it's able to generate more income than servicing debt within the next 2 years? What should you do? And we came with a conclusion that yes, we're going to, over the next 3 years on the capex, we're going to save 30 billion on capex. Then we said, over and above that, on the OPEX side, the main players there is, one, your primary energy, and then the employees. And we have been discussing that as to how then, we know that the figure should be 14 billion from the operations. The question is that we have to put that in numbers and come back to the board and the minister and say this is how it's going to be done. Because when you do that, then all of a sudden, the previous problems that ESCOM has had were in, cost has always been above the revenue, become something of the past. And that is what we're going to do. So when the member of the board here highlighted that we know where we are going, we have already cut the capex side of business, you give us a space to know how are we going to deal with the OPEX. Then we'll come here, and when we provide those numbers, it won't be, we're going to turn around this place in 20, 30 years' time. Sorry, in 5, 6 years' time. But we'll be talking about the numbers that will sustain the business of ESCOM in the next 2-3 years or so. Because the biggest challenge of ESCOM is cost. Then we can start talking about that. CAPEX, yes, we have Kusile, we have Medupi, we need to deal with that. The second thing, with the coal, yes, there's a demand for coal, but the price is increasing. Then we have employees. We need to measure these two so that we ensure the sustainability of the business. Let me just highlight, Chair. If we got 16% that we requested from NESA, would it have solved our problem? No, it wouldn't have. It just keeps us above the water. But if we deal with the cost side of business together with that 16% that we are expecting from NASA, then we are in a totally different position on the financial sustainability of the business. I'm now talking, just going back to the terms, I'm now talking about what is referred to as the efficient ratio. What is the efficient ratio of ESCOM? Efficient ratio is your cost to revenue. Right now, it is pretty bad. It's almost about 70%. We should bring it down to about 65% or so over a short period of time. And to do so, Chair, will mean that we have to make very painful and very difficult decisions. And that is what we are looking to. That is why at this juncture, we don't have the immediate answers. We have the short-term answers. We know that we have to borrow $72 billion. We know that the market is available for that. But we also know that if we keep the CAPEX constant, we reduce by $10 billion annually. That will help us. But we need to do more than that. Because once we have that efficient ratio, let me make an example. Transnet has an EBITDA margin of 40, which means it has an efficiency ratio of 60. It is sitting far better than where we are. With us, we have an EBITDA of 25. So we have the efficiency of 75. For the size of this institution, that has to give. So we're looking at the revenue side. And what can we do on the revenue side? The Department of Energy, for example, is working on the universal franchise. Universal access. It's universal access. We have had a budget. They said, we are giving you $3.2 billion this year. You have to make sure that you provide electricity to those places where maybe municipalities are struggling. But they've also said, we have problems with other municipalities that they can't deliver. So the issue at hand is, when we engage with them, now it's a revenue decision. Could we not be able to increase that from $3.2 billion to $5 to $6 billion because we have the required skills? Now we are beginning to look at a business that is not only looking at the tariffs, but trying to maximize the revenue side. Then we said, yes, it is right that our municipality debt is not sustainable. In fact, even the investors are saying, this is not sustainable. What are you going to do about it? But what have we done? We wrote letters to the Minister of DPE, Minister of Finance, and Minister of Energy. We highlighted our dire situation, that this debt can no longer be maintained at this level, that we are going to begin to deal with those that do not pay. And that is, municipalities initially, when you start to switch off the power, we give a couple of hours, let's say 4 hours a day, or 2 hours actually. We normally start 6, 7 to 8 o'clock. But people learn to live through that. They wake up early, cook early, and come back. They do things like that. You know? So it has not helped that much. What we have then decided to do is that we are going to increase the hours from this 2 to 4, and if there is no positive response, that 4 will go to 14. Now, this is tough and difficult, but we have to be cognizant of the fact that if we do not get this collection, then the very same investors that who are begging to put the money into Eskom are saying, we are not going to put your hand here. We are not going to put the money here. You deal with that so that we know that we have controls, and if you do have controls, then we're going to lend you money. But we can't lend you money when, in the first 2 months, you had non-performing of about 354 to 400 million a month. And this 13 billion excludes Soweto, where we have a total debt of about 5 billion. So the discussion that we have as we begin to look at the strategy of Eskom has more to do not just with the strategy, but the political support that we'll expect from the House of this sort and this committee. Because when Eskom endeavored in a direction like this before, they were always concerned that you cannot go this way. But because it has reached this level, it becomes very, very difficult to sell Eskom to the investors. So going back to the story, we're clear what needs to be done. We need to grow the revenue side of business. Mm-hmm. We need to see the tariff as an added bonus on what we seek to do. But importantly, we need to be strict on our costs. And that's what we're going to do. At a high level, that is what we are trying to do. But I'll request the members to also talk. Okay, let me just highlight. On municipalities, we have a plan. And we are dealing with that. And because of the decisions that have been made, we are steadily beginning to see the payments improving a bit. But we can still do more. But this is not only about what is happening in South Africa. We have a small element of export, and there have been two countries that have not been paying, and we have laid down the foundation and the condition, and we told them that we're going to switch. In fact, they paid last week and the week before. It's about controls, it's about commitment, but importantly, it's about taking decisions that might be painful, that all of us do not need to take. But if we don't take those decisions, Eskom will continue to have exactly the same problem. When NASA talks about cost, why not disagree with the price we're agreeing on? But when they talk about the fact that maybe we should have done better on cost, there's a valid point in that. And that's what we are trying to do. So we have to meet at some point. There should be some form of equilibrium, because we'll then be in a position to say, look, once we're done with this, look at our CAPEX, look at our OPEX, look at where we are when it comes to efficient ratio, or look at our EBITDA margin. Those are things that should be determined. They should determine how we survive. And up until now, Eskom has not been forward-looking or coming forth and saying, this is the target we are pursuing. Come what may, we'll follow it. And that's what we are going to do. Once we begin to do that, some of the issues that have been raised on sustainability, of us not knowing how to run the business, or us not prioritizing things, become something of the past. Because in all fairness, for an institution that has had a privilege of recapitalization plus that has had tariff increases during the past 10, 11 years or so, we should be in a better position. So we acknowledge that, and we are doing something about that. We've been here for 2 months, and we say, give us another 3-4 months, we'll come up with something better. But I request the members to continue.
Thank you, Chair. Just going back to the issue of the strategy. Obviously, our interim group CE has got to look at the short term, but also we need to look also at the long term. And our view is that to address the questions that were asked, like around the issue of the utility debt spiral, and also where are we taking this organization, we firmly believe that Eskom should be part of our energy transition in line with our national development plan. So in other words, it's not just going to be a question of Eskom only. Eskom is part of that energy transition. And hence, therefore, we are looking now as a board that, as outlined in the National Development Plan, how do we make sure then that we participate actively in that energy transition? So in other words, there is an acceptance that Eskom cannot continue as is it currently structured. We need to look at other methods. However, that's going to need the buy-in from the society, the buy-in from organized labor, the buy-in from organized business. So basically, those are the kind of things that we need to start thinking about. Yes, we are going to put some bones for the long-term vision of Eskom, but at this point in time, we also would like to make sure that we take everybody along with us. So I suppose we can continue.
Yes, I have. I think you touched on what has gone wrong on debt ballooning. Yeah, debt at 367 billion is huge. I think my CFO can comment on that. And it gives us a gearing of 72%, and that is huge. But we can only be able to really have an impact on this if we are able to begin to reduce our cost itself. It has been increasing because cost has been increasing, but we should not lose sight of the fact that some of the decisions that we are paying now for are mistakes that were made in 2000 and 1998, where the projections, maybe future projections of Eskom and the demand of electricity were not projected very well on the one side. And secondly, when we started working on Usile and with Medupi, the funding project and the money that was required has escalated far more, I think it's 3 times what the projections were at the beginning. So where we are at this moment in time, how then do you avoid this escalation to continue? To again rein in the cost, maximize the revenue, be clear as to what needs to be done as you move forward, begin to identify non-key assets that are on your portfolio, get rid of it, sell them out to those that are interested. So you create that environment where you are concentrating on core business, and that's what we intend to do. Thank you.
I know that it's convenient to pass the bait, but because you are the new board, so I'll be very friendly. But don't share amongst yourselves. You must tell me who's next. Okay, I think it's there for
me. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm just going to address some of the specific questions that were raised, and the ones that don't cover, if you can just remind us, and maybe the CE and the board member can cover. I think the one question around included in the 20 billion, does it include the 5 billion from the PIC? No, that was a separate loan, and it has been repaid, and yes, Chairperson, it was repaid with interest to the PIC. The other question from Honorable Davis was around the 30% tariff request. Our understanding of that question is, yes, there are 3 outstanding regulatory clearing account applications, which total 66 billion, which NERSA has indicated they're in the process of addressing and making a decision on. Yes, it's correct that if you look at where the revenue is at about 190 billion, if you were to get the 60 billion of 200 billion rand base as a once-off determination, mathematically it is 30%. Chairperson, the methodology does allow, once NERSA determines what's valid and efficient on those applications, the methodology does allow for the regulator to phase that in over a period of time. I did mention this at the closing hearings on the 20%, that Eskom is not expecting a once-off adjustment. We understand the impact to the economy, and we expect NERSA will then phase that in. So we did acknowledge that, and that's how our anticipation of how the RCAs, once decided, will be phased in over a period of time, taking into account our requirements in terms of financial and operating needs. Chairperson, with regard to elasticity, I'm not close to the details around the inelasticity or elasticity, but the one thing I can say from a factual perspective, even in this financial year with a 2.2% average price increase, we still see a reduction in sales volumes that have come through during this financial year. And maybe the last one from my side around nuclear and what will it do to the financials, Chairperson. We were asked this question at the release of the interim, and I said, you know, if I'm finding it difficult to meet my current commitments for my existing asset base and completing of Medupi and Kusile, I can't put a further bill program onto Eskom's financials at this point in time. I think we all await the IRP and what will it say in terms of the future that the country requires. But we need to complete what we have, and at this point in time, that's our focus. And I'll hand back to you. So with regard to salaries and bonuses, Chair, I think from our perspective, and you know, we said at the end of the day, I think the one member highlighted where Eskom's financial situation is in terms of our bottom line, and we are comfortable that it's going to be very difficult if you make a loss as a financial entity, how can you justify paying huge bonuses? Obviously, those discussions with unions especially needs to be had, but at this point in time, our assumption is that if it's not funded to the bottom line, it's difficult to justify. Thanks.
I will touch again on the point that my colleague has raised of elasticity and inelastic. Chair, we are beginning to see how we're losing some of the clients precisely of this, and it's not the position of Eskom that electricity is inelastic. And we will do as much as possible to reduce the cost of electricity as much as possible, but within the confines of the economic environment that we are operating under. And then, Honourable Member Mabanda, you asked us a tariff increase, if we got what was required, how was it going to affect the municipalities? It's a valid point. But I think if we are honest about ourselves, the challenges that we are facing on municipalities are less about affordability, but more about whether or not do we have a control system, politically, to enforce that people pay what is due to them. I will make an example. I like to make this example. I'm from a very small township in Ascot, MJZ, Midlands, KZN, called Wembisi. The poverty levels there are unbearable. They are high. But people there know, Chair, that they have to pay on prepayment system. Everyone knows. Unemployment is huge. No, there was Nestle, there was Bacon Factory. The factory's left. It's unbearable. But they know that they have a prepayment ticket, and that card they have to pay. When you compare a community like that to, say, a community in Soweto, who, when I look from the face value, has a very high per capita income, and they're not willing, they don't want the prepayments,
when he talks about the control system, the political system that this house here has to make a call, because this is not about the problems of ESCOM as such. This is a South African problem, and it's not just about ESCOM. It's about water issues, and unless we come with a solution as to how we're going to deal with that, we'll continuously have this problem. And what we are beginning to see is a gradual increasing number of municipalities that all along have been paying and they're not paying. Yes, the financial and the economic situation is dire, but we need to ask ourselves, why is it so? Or let me put myself in the shoes of a community next to the one that is not paying. Why should I pay? Those are things that I hope this committee can level or can elevate it up, because it needs a thorough discussion. Could you, through you, Chair, I think then there was an issue on PPI, on IPPs.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think it was Honorable Esther Hazen raised the issue around IPPs. In the 2018 application, the 5.23, ESCOM made the assumption, and that is why that reduction of about 7 billion that it includes up to bid window 3.5 and 4, mm-hmm. that's in the application. And on that basis, NERSA has then made that allowance of 26 billion for IPPs. Included in that for those bid windows, Chairperson, is also the connections up to those bid windows. Obviously, when the IRP is released and there's future bid windows, then that will be incorporated in future applications. And maybe let me just touch on the other question around why do we need OCGTs. Yes, the amount is much smaller, but if you look at the peak in that hour, it's far more cheaper to just start up an OCGT, open cycle gas turbine, then run a base load to meet that one requirement. So yes, and the determination only assumes that the open cycle gas turbines have a load factor of about 0.5% in the financial year 18-19. So it's really required during the peak on those hours, which is far more efficient than running base load capacity to meet that hourly demand when required. And similarly, Chair, that is why we also make use of the demand market participation, the demand response to help balance supply when it's required, and also to address some technical requirements, I think in terms of frequencies on the grid. So that's why these small amounts that's allowed in this determination of 5.23% for those two categories.
You say something about OCGTs that I haven't heard before. So can we have follow-up questions? You should ask Honorable Davis to resolve this sort of problem. The inquiry has arrived. Welcome, Honorable Ranto. Honorable Mhambisala.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. I was hoping not to speak in this meeting because my voice has problems. I've got flu. Chairperson, Mr. Adebe is consistently saying that amongst the solutions that we need for the municipal debts is a political system. Does this mean Eskom has no comprehensive debt recovery plan? Because a political will or a political system, in my view, will never assist you to collect your debts. You must be take responsibility as utility in ensuring that municipalities are paying their debts. Two, do you have payment systems in place? Because if you had payment systems in place, I don't think that you would be arguing the issue of the municipal debts as we are seated here. For an example, if I have an account at Fushini, I would arrange a debit order that goes through automatically to pay that particular account. Do you have payment systems in place as the entity? Chairperson, NERSA argues that the 5.3% tariff increase is in line with the government policy to reduce income inequality, poverty, and unemployment. Mm. And, you know, to this end, I am supporting this decision of NERSA because it's not about the large intensive users. Because focus in terms of Eskom, it's on the large intensive users. And the government of today is a government that is biased to the poor. So I just want to align myself with the decision of NERSA, even though you are going to have some engagements, because for me, it is very reasonable. And it's not for the first time that Eskom requested a double-digit increase. Last time it was, you know, rejected. And this time you brought another double-digit and it's rejected. You must learn one or two things from that. Thank you.
Thanks.
Chair, thank you. I just want to say I wish the new board all of the best of luck, and you really need it. Eskom and the whole country, really, the whole economy depends on electricity, affordable electricity, and the capacity to build it. So I wish you people all the luck.
Honorable Davis.
Thanks, Chair. Just on the municipal debt, I just want to make the point that we did meet with, we had a joint committee meeting with the Portfolio Committee on Cooperative Governance, and we heard that initially there was going to be an interministerial task team report by, I think it was 13th of October, and that was then extended to, if my memory serves me correctly, the end of January, Chair. I don't believe that report has been forthcoming, and I would like to urge us to have another meeting, another joint meeting with the Portfolio Committee on Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, and the respective ministers who sat on that interministerial task team to find out what the progress is with that. Because it's, I mean, part of the problem is Eskom's credit control, but it's also the problem affects other spheres of government, and it affects other stakeholders as well. So I think we need to have that meeting. Then thank you for giving us a broad outline of the strategy. Obviously, you need to put some meat on the bones. I just wonder that in your deliberations and discussions, if any thought is given to the restructuring of Eskom, specifically around breaking down its monopoly on electricity generation and transmission, because that would be one way potentially of making Eskom far more efficient. So does that feature in your discussions at all, and at what level are those discussions being had? Then I did read some news reports that Eskom is considering going to court to get NERSA to reverse its decision on the tariff application. If you could just confirm whether that is still on the table, if there is a chance that you will go to court. And then I think it was the chief executive officer who said that you need to borrow 72 billion rand. Will you be applying for any more government bailouts this year, any capital injections from government this year? And if so, how much do you plan to ask government for? Then I think you made a very good point that you need to make very painful and difficult decisions around the cost reductions. My question about bonuses and salaries was partly answered by your colleague. But I'd like to know specifically if the senior management team, the chief executives, the senior managers, will you forego your bonuses this year? Because I think that would send a very strong signal to the country and to the rest of your employees that you're putting your money where your mouth is and that you are willing to take painful decisions that affect you and your pocket. So can you confirm today whether you will be foregoing your performance bonuses? And then just lastly, on elasticity, I know that this is kind of an abstract argument, but I still think it really goes to the heart of the question. And if you read the record for decision, it's quite clear, and I'm going to quote from it, because the chief executive, just before I quote from it, the chief executive says that it's not the position of Eskom that electricity is inelastic. But that's a contradiction of what the record for decision says. Because the record for decision says, on page 29, Eskom argued against stakeholder comments during the public hearings that it is in the throes of a utility death spiral by saying that electricity demand in South Africa is relatively inelastic in terms of price sensitivity. So there, Eskom was saying that electricity price was inelastic, and you're saying that it's actually elastic. So which one is right? Is it the old Eskom or the new Eskom? Are you deliberately contradicting the old Eskom? Are you saying that Eskom's changed its position? Or was that just an error in the report? Because I really do think it goes to the heart of this. Because if electricity is elastic, then surely higher tariff increases will put Eskom in a worse position because you'll have fewer sales, which will mean less revenue. So I'd like to ask you, have you calculated the optimal tariff? In other words, have you calculated the price at which Eskom will maximize its revenue? And what is that optimal price expressed as a percentage increase? So is it close to the 5% increase that you've already been granted, or would it be higher? Is it the 20% or is it somewhere in between? What is that optimal price? Thanks.
Thanks for clarifying your question. When you started, I thought that's what you're talking about. When you asked for the embryo of the plan, so I thought, oh, Honorable Davis. Now the question is clear. breaking down to monopoly. I knew it when I asked the question. Thanks for being very consistent. So let's take responses.
Thanks, Chair. I will start and my colleagues will then come in. Honorable Ambassador, ask a question, whether we have a recovery plan. We do have a recovery plan. And when we're talking about the political solution, it's because of what has happened previously. It's not the first time that Eskom
has undertaken this project. But from time to time, because we have had the privilege of engaging with those that have been involved, there has been political intervention which deter that this cannot be continued. And in fact, we discussed this in detail with SCOPA members who had invited us about 3 weeks back. And because they were more interested in us explaining the issue of municipal debt, we explained that in detail and we indicated some of the challenges that we have. So, in a way, we are requesting that such endeavors or engagements be minimized so that we can proceed with our work. With regard to recovery plan and the payment system, we do have that. And in fact, it's what is currently operating. But it's up to the individuals to use it. We try to encourage it. The municipalities are a bit more complicated than what you see on the face value. For example, when people from ESCOM go to put the prepayments, in some areas those are destroyed. They are kicked out and destroyed. And sometimes municipalities, when they go to communities, they have to be supported. So it needs a balancing act. I'm not saying that ESCOM doesn't have the responsibilities we have. That is why we get paid for this job. But there need to be some kind of interjection. The 5.23, I understand that the member says that he feels that he's supportive of NESA. Personally, I would support that. But the big issue at hand is the sustainability of this institution. And if ESCOM is not sustainable, the impact thereof is not only affecting the rich people, it will affect the whole South Africans. So we have to, on our side, play our role in trying to turn around this institution. But NESA also has a responsibility on our side, but South Africans themselves have a responsibility in paying less, because the combination of that will leave us in a better position. Yes, still on Mr. Davis, Honorable Davis, we are talking about this municipal debt again. Yes, there is an interministerial task team. That task team is made out of the Minister of Finance, Minister of DPE, COPTA, and the Minister of Energy. They have met, and the chairman of ESCOM. They have met a number of times, and they're still working on the strategy. As far as I'm concerned, they'll come back and explain that to Parliament. So there is work that is being done. While we are happy about the progress that's been achieved thus far, but the challenge is we have to make decisions in the meantime, because we don't have that leverage of time on our side. Then the monopoly, breaking the monopoly, you know, I think you want to, should I? Okay, yeah.
Okay. Yes, through the chair.
Okay.
I did mention that we definitely have got to look at the end state of the electricity supply industry, and obviously a number of options are going to be put on the table. But also, as I've indicated, it's going to be impacting the whole of South Africa. It's not just going to be ESCOM that is going to be affected. So in other words, it's going to be affecting basically everybody else. And at this point in time, I think it would be a little bit premature to say what kind of structure is going to be in place. But what we're simply saying, we are ready for any kind of dialogue that can be put on the table on the future of our own electricity supply industry as a whole.
What is important, Chair, just to add on that point, is that we need each business unit, whether it's generation or transmission, to be accountable for their performance. So each one will have its own P&L, profit and loss, because currently we have grouped all of them together. And because of that grouping, it becomes a challenge to see which of these are efficiently operating. But that can be done in the current construct. What I'm just trying to highlight is we are already making some moves
at the operational level, but we still have to review the whole business operations, and that's what the member is saying. So it's not something that is out, but it's something that at some stage will come back and explain. The court issue with NESA, we've been talking to NESA, and we really want to come to a conclusion. And the Minister of Public Enterprise has noted that development, and he feels that it should be discussed at that ministerial level without compromising the autonomy of NESA. So right now, there was a discussion between the Minister of Energy and the Minister of DPE, I think it was 2 or 3 days back, and today there will also be further discussions between the officials from DPE and DOE, and we'll take it from there. So it's a partnership from different stakeholders. Applying for government bailout, I think for this year, with that is 2018-19 April, for the borrowing of 72 billion rand, we won't need a new government intervention. But we will come up with a plan, as we have already indicated, that will be articulated and clear as to how we intend to manage this debt as we move forward. But the primary objective as we engage with government, it will be to highlight and commit to the reduction on the cost side of our business. So, no, we are not. The bonus issues, that's a difficult one again. The year is not over, and bonuses are paid according to the targets that have been set up. Eskom, although we are 2 months down the line, has set certain targets. We'll evaluate whether those have been met. If they've been met, the high level, then bonuses will be paid. If they haven't, for example, the EBITDA margin that we are targeting and all those financial issues, then they won't be paid. It's as simple as that. I cannot prejudge because we still have a couple of weeks. Magic can happen in this next 2 or 3 weeks or so. But the truth of the matter, I think through you, Chair, is that there were targets that were set by the previous board, and the assessment and the evaluation of whether bonuses are paid or not will be informed by how we perform. Currently, as the CFO has indicated, it will be tough, but we'll see. We'll reach that stage. The elasticity, I think maybe the CFO can comment and you can. Our funding model, our operating business model that we spoke about, is informed by what we have already indicated, is informed by 3 variables that are important for us to be sustainable. It doesn't start from the basis that we only have to look at what NESA gives us. But it also looks at the maximization of revenue through different means and ways. And it also talks about reducing the cost. Now, if you combine all these variables into the equation, it gives you one answer. And that answer is, how then do you maximize or enhance your sales? How do you improve your sales volume? Amongst the list of things that we have to look into, of course, is the price. But at this moment in time, we have severe challenges that we need to deal with. And personally, my view is that electricity is not inelastic. You have to go to a global picture. You know, you will see, and I'm happy that you talk about the global spiral. Yeah, that is happening in some of the utilities, where you find that their share of the market continues to decrease. Ours, too, has decreased over time. We're already sitting at about 90%. And if we do not work on the price, and we're price efficient to generate revenue, more and more of the players are going to come here. So, Chair, it would be very naive of us to assume that South Africa
will be sitting and waiting and paying whatever we are requested. We are aware, one, of the new market that is coming in, but secondly, that we have to run the business efficiently. It's just a stage in time that we have to deal with, and that's what we are trying to do in the meantime. I think I'm right there.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Maybe let me just respond to Honorable Davis's last question around optimal price. I think in terms of Eskom, it applies according to the regulatory methodology, which is your cost plus a return. But it's influenced by a number of assumptions. The sales, as we mentioned, but more importantly, what are the capital requirements, especially as you go forward over a longer period of time, and to ensure that ultimately whatever that price should be able to put Eskom in a situation that recovers the efficient costs and can meet the debt service commitments when they fall due. The bottom line at the moment is Eskom does have a large amount of debt on the balance sheet, $367 billion. A large component of that is guaranteed through National Treasury. And in the event that Eskom can't meet those requirements, we will have to then go back to government, National Treasury, to assist with making good those debt commitments. We obviously understand that National Treasury and government's balance sheet is also quite tight at the moment, and that's why the CE said in the next financial year, with the 72 billion rand, we don't anticipate going back to government and National Treasury. However, when we look into the future, that's where the price must ensure that that situation remains the same as we have the assumption today. Thank you, Chairperson.
So that's all. So can we, I think we can move towards closure. Honorable Davis, although you were looking for a contradiction between the old and the new ESCOM, I heard what you read there, and I listened to NERSA just 2 weeks ago. But you can see that yourself, that the argument that electricity is inelastic will not hold. So I think the what was said by Mr. Hadeba just now should be the correct approach by ESCOM. If anybody said what is in that report previously, it would make sense. From the last discussion we had, from today's discussion, you can see that that such an economic argument will not hold. The second thing, the joint meeting, we all honorable members this. I know that when we had the last joint meeting with COCT, we had agreed that immediately. In fact, we were trying to do this in January, and but in later on, we agreed we should do it after SONA. There's an outstanding meeting, joint meeting with all the departments and the portfolio committees that are concerned on municipal debt, including the constitutional dispute that is between ESCOM, municipalities, and SALC. So that has got to be resolved. So the only thing that we didn't put this on our program because we do want to suggest that it should be the portfolio committee on COCTA that leads this process. We did take the initiative the last time, but we think that they should lead the process and convene the next meeting. And in that regard, we're having a conversation with them to ensure that the meeting can happen soon, so that this matter can be resolved, because otherwise they're going to be coming here to Parliament all the time, come to SCOPA, come to ASK, go to other committees. So it's best that we bring all the ministers' consent, all the committees' consent into one discussion and try and find a solution to this matter and see if we can find a conclusion. The NERSA Eskom, the 2018 dispute. You see on the last page there, on the last page of the presentation says that Eskom will utilize the processes of the National Energy Regulatory Act to address the matter. We hope that through other interventions a solution will be found. And we're quite clear from where we stand. We're not wanting to compromise the independence of the regulator, but the decisions that are made must be sound. They must be based on proper consultation, that all relevant information has been shared, not because there's a misunderstanding on the basis that there's not the information base is not the same. So that's all we say. We say ultimately NERSA will make its decision, but they will have to make sure that all government entities do cooperate in dealing with matters like this, because when a mistake is made, it is not just one entity that will suffer. So the consequences will ultimately be with the consumer. The energy supply industry, what this committee has been calling the future, the end state of the electricity supply. This is our current standing decision. The decision in the last BRRR report said, as soon as the Department of Energy has finalized with the IRP, they should come back to report on this matter to the committee on the future of the electricity sector. So we've got to come back to that. Otherwise, if we don't resolve that matter, we discuss it. Shall I say, through the back door, when we're not discussing it and then questions about it arise. I think we must confront it, deal with it, come to a conclusion about what should be the structure of the electricity supply industry in South Africa and settle that matter. The 30%, I was wondering what is the 30%. I missed what you read, Honorable Davis. I just want to urge that I know that it sounds, it makes a sensational sense to put it that way. 30% plus 5.2%, 35%, you're a hot Eskom. But truth be told, we know what's happening with the RCAs, that they were stalled because of court action in the past, and as a result now they're being bundled into one process. So it can be correct that, boom, at the same time, it is 30% plus 5%. And then, so I think how we communicate that matter ourselves should be a bit clearer. So we don't know what NERSA is going to decide ultimately on the RCA. So they have to make the decision. They said to us last time they're going through the hearings. When that is completed, and make the determination. All I'm saying is that public discourse should be more, not just reasonable, but what is the correct English word? Perhaps more balanced. Well, it's not the best English word. That's what I can master at the moment. Honorable Mohambe, I'm sure we can find a better English word for that. But the point I'm making is, we should be able to communicate that It's not as if, because it's very easy in public that Eskom is applying for 5.3, is now getting 30% as if it's the same application at the same time. So that's what I'm trying to. And I know that Eskom did explain that because of the economic impact of this, this will be phased in. So I think how the matter is handled, it should be, at least we must stick to the facts. All right. Honorable Faku, are you on your way out? I overheard that. So let us close so that honorable members can go to memorial service. Eskom, thanks very much. So we will call you back at some point to have a discussion. The meeting is closed.